Welcome to the Health Ranger Report on Brightion.tv. Today, our guest is Dr. Pierre Corey, who's the author of the book called The War on Ivermectin. This is a fascinating book, and this is going to be a fascinating interview about what went wrong in mainstream medicine, where they claim to be, you know, following the evidence and supported by science, and yet they ended up killing people and denying people access to medicine that actually works, which is ivermectin, among other things. So in today's interview with Dr. Pierre Corey, we get a chance to talk about what works to treat spike protein toxicity, what's working to bring people back from all of the symptoms, the horrific symptoms, following COVID vaccination or COVID infections and COVID shedding. You're going to learn a lot here today, so stay with us right here on Brightion.tv with the Health Ranger Report featuring Dr. Pierre Corey. Straight ahead.
Hello, I'm Dr. Hochsi. Men, when things hit the fan, don't be crying in the closet with your wife and daughters. They're counting on you to lead them and to be a man who's physically fit, mentally sharp, and spiritually strong. At the Hochsi Health and Wellness Center, this is what we help you become. God has given your body amazing restorative powers to heal itself. We're in the business of transforming lives naturally. We've developed an 8-point treatment regimen, which includes healthy eating, vitamins and minerals, and hormone replacement, including testosterone. Become the man God wants you to be. Our program for men will help you put a tiger back in your tank so you can protect your family during these trying times. Contact us at the Hochsi Health and Wellness Center for a complimentary wellness consultation. Get your energy back so we can take our country back.
All right, what's up, everybody? My name is Scott Armstrong from Rebunked.News, Pirate Stream Media, The Last American Vagabond, and The Unjected Show, coming at you live in Nashville from the Reawaken America Tour. And you're tuned in to The Uncensored Truth on Brighteon TV.
Hey, I'm Clay.
Welcome to Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and today's interview is with a special guest, Dr. Pierre Corey. He is the author of this must-read book called The War on Ivermectin. It's available at booksellers everywhere. We'll talk about that book. He's also the co-founder and medical director at the FLCCC Alliance that I have up here. We'll talk about that, but let's welcome him to the show. Dr. Pierre Corey, it's an honor to have you on. Thank you for joining me today.
Mike, no, the honor is mine. Thanks for having me.
Well, we appreciate you spending time with us, and your book is, I think, critical reading, The War on Ivermectin. How is it that this molecule, this life-saving, Nobel Prize-winning molecule, could be so disparaged by the so-called evidence-based medical community over the last couple of years?
Yeah, well, so the book, although the book focuses on ivermectin, it really is, it's just a case example of the decades-long war on generic, off-patent, repurposed drugs. I mean, ivermectin is just the latest, and I would say the most calamitous war on repurposed drugs. But, to your question, Mike, I mean, I can't think of a compound or a molecule that was as threatening to the objectives of the forces at play in COVID. And, you know, the easiest one to talk about is the financial ones, right? I mean, literally overnight, you had a massive market open up across the world for vaccines and then other pharmaceuticals, right? Like Paxlovid and Molnupiravir, monoclonal antibodies and Remdesivir. I mean, massive market, right? Because almost everyone on Earth was going to get COVID. And so suddenly you have the Earth as a customer, and there's little old ivermectin, time-tested, safe, ubiquitous. I mean, it's available in every country of the world. Almost everyone in the world could have access to ivermectin easily. And it would turn out to be wickedly effective against COVID. And so they had a problem on their hands. And, you know, that's what my book is about. You know, I would say my book is, it's part biography. I kind of go through a little bit of my career, but then I really go through my COVID journey because, you know, ivermectin is really just one chapter. I've fought a lot of frauds on this one.
Dr. Corey, it's extraordinary, though, what you're saying even right now is that some power base within the medical establishment actively sought to deprive the people of access to something that could have saved who knows how many lives, countless lives. How can we find ourselves in this situation?
Well, as I've come to learn, so I would say, you know, Mike, before COVID, I mean, I kind of knew that Big Pharma was not to be trusted. You know, I kind of knew that they pulled hijinks and probably manipulated some data here and there to sell their wares. I mean, I had a general sense that, you know, they were not a ethical or moral functioning industry. But what I've come to find out is they're literally a criminal syndicate. And when you ask, you know, how could they do this? You know, what I've since discovered in my studies of the history of the pharmaceutical industry, I mean, they do not care. They do not care if people die. They will suppress evidence of adverse effects of their own products. They will, you know, like I said, they'll attack competitors that might threaten their profits. And in this case, the scope and the scale of the consequences of attacking ivermectin was that the most of the developed world, I mean, I would say the advanced health economies around the world, I mean, they literally removed ivermectin from hospital formularies. they frightened and threatened pharmacists to not fill the drug. And that was the other thing. It's not only the corrupt and criminal history of the pharmaceutical industry that I learned about, but it's actually the control that they've gained over the institutions of medicine. And that control is The most shocking to me is their iron-fisted control over the high-impact medical journals. Because it was really, for me, that's the foundation of how they conducted the war, is what they published in the highest-impact medical journals in the world. And those studies that were done, remember, they hired nothing but pharma-conflicted investigators for those studies. I mean, the people who ran those studies literally worked for Pfizer. Okay.
Right, right.
Or for a competitor ivermectin. It was just, you know, it's almost laughable if you find this funny, which I don't, but you know, and so you see the control over the journals. You see the control over the agencies. I mean, anyone who's gotten a leadership position from those health agencies is literally working in the service of the pharmacy. You don't get to where Fauci is unless you're a water boy for pharma. And even include the FDA committees that are approving those vaccines. And, you know, the list goes on and on. But the point I want to make, and I'll stop there, is, you know, I got to see just how tight the control is. And, I mean, every policy that came out, every edict that came out, you know, all the lies that came out were to serve the pharmaceutical industry and whoever's behind them.
That is sobering, and I'm glad you recognize that, and a lot of people have, including many medical professionals, but some still have not. Some are still drinking the Kool-Aid. But I remember, you know, I've advocated for nutrition, naturopathic modalities for over 20 years, and for a lot of those years, the criticism was from the, you know, the establishment was, oh, well, our medicine is evidence-based, and our science is self-correcting. Those were the claims. And they said, well, if there's new evidence that shows something works, we will embrace it because we are scientists. But what you have described, and especially in your book, The War on Ivermectin, shreds that entire bogus narrative. They're not driven by evidence. They're driven by profits for Big Pharma.
I like what you said, and I appreciate your background, Mike. And I would call you one of the OGs, you know, the original gangsters in really trying to promote, you know, healthy behaviors with safe compounds and nutraceuticals. And, You know, it's interesting, Mike, because I want to say something about that. You know, I'm a system doc, and I'm an allopath. I mean, I was trained in critical care and lung disease, and I mean, I basically used pharmaceuticals my whole career. And now that I've left and I started a private practice where I'm focusing on the treatment of complex chronic illnesses, you know, long COVID and vaccine injury syndromes, and I'm learning a ton about nutritional aspects to health and all sorts of therapies, which if you'd asked me about 3 years ago, I've been like, that's wacko stuff. There's no evidence for that. That's what all those alternative guys, you know, I had that kind of arrogant, dismissive attitude that's inculcated in you when you are like at the tops of science, right? Is that we have,
right.
But to your point on what you said, I will tell you the thing that just crushes me about this evidence-based medicine is that they've literally taken that over and they use that and they wield that like a club. And one of the best ways in which they do that is they use a term called insufficient evidence. So bring forth, right? They're going to say insufficient evidence to support your assertion that Nigella sativa is helpful or whatever it is, right? But then when you look at what defines sufficient evidence, it's an absolute joke. It's one trial. Like, for instance, right, we penned a contract and we bought billions of dollars of remdesivir based on a trial done by the company before the data was even released. It was only, remember the press conference with Fauci and Trump in the Oval Office, and we literally bought billions. And so there's sufficient evidence for when you have a pricey patented pharmaceutical, one trial will do it, but everything else is insufficient. They just dismiss everything as insufficient evidence.
You've really nailed something there, and I appreciate you bringing that up. And it's interesting because what we share here, as you're understanding and working with, you know, nutraceuticals and molecules that can be synthesized by plants in some cases. You know, I have gone into the science realm with a multiple mass spec laboratory looking at plant-based molecules and looking at things and looking at contaminants and heavy metals and so on. We have six mass spec instruments in our lab now. We're about to add dioxin testing, which should be interesting. It's the first gas chromatograph interface that we've had. But the thing that I've always told people is that molecules are molecules. Mm-hmm. Let's take ivermectin. It doesn't matter if ivermectin is synthesized in a lab or if it came from a soil microbe or if it grew in a tree bark. If you isolate the molecule, that molecule, it is what it is. It doesn't have a memory of where it came from. It doesn't have an agenda. It doesn't discriminate. It has activity. It has physiological activity. It might be a polar molecule, nonpolar. It does certain things in the body, and that's it. So whether that molecule came from, you know, a pharmaceutical lab or from a tree, that's irrelevant to what it does. And we should look at all molecules with neutrality, which brings us to ivermectin. And yet, as you just said, they're not looking at molecules with, you know, an unbiased point of view.
No, if it's off patent and safe and widely available and you can get it from nature, I mean, why would they? Right. I mean, they absolutely have no incentive to do that. And, you know, that's another aspect of it. Right. It's not only, you know, the regulatory control, but it's really the education. Like, Mike, since I, you know, started my new practice and I have this deep interest, right, in studying this very complex chronic syndrome of vaccine injury and long haul, I feel like I'm undergoing training again as a physician. Like, I'm learning from so many people that are deeply studied on numerous aspects of therapeutics that are not pharma controlled, right? And so, like, I work with naturopaths and osteopaths and chiropractors, you know, people who do different manipulations, and then a lot of more broad-based theories like hyperbaric oxygen and ozone and things that are just really potent and safe and really can help people. And I gotta tell you, it's somewhat of a joy. I feel free and I feel, my mind is open and I'm filling it as fast as I can because I have a lot of patients that I'm trying to help.
Well, and this is fascinating. I want to talk about your practice in a second, but what I found over the years, just sharing this with you publicly, is that if you find a molecule of interest and you go to PubMed and you look for it, like sulforaphane, you know, synthesized in broccoli sprouts or cruciferous vegetables, for example, or curcuminoids, you know, in turmeric or what have you. You mentioned black cumin seed there. If you look at PubMed, there's actually an extraordinary amount of research on a lot of these molecules. It's just that a lot of that research is out of China, for example, or India.
So, I love that you said that. So you know, my partner, the co-founder of our nonprofit organization, you know, Professor Paul Marek, you know, we consider Paul like the grand poobah. I mean, he's got the big brain. He researches obsessively. And what you just said, I mean, Paul has undergone just this enlightenment over the last 2 years, because it's exactly what you said. You can put in a compound or an active molecule from a plant or from any other natural source, and you can find dozens and dozens of studies showing its safety, its efficacy, how it works, what it can be applied in. But yet that doesn't enter the curriculum of a medical student.
That's right.
They teach you those options. And so it's, you know, it's good that there's a network of folks like you that, you know, putting out good sound. And I got to tell you, Mike, that's probably, I think we do similar things now. I mean, when I look at my nonprofit, we started out with the mission of just developing the most effective treatment protocols for COVID. And we did that. I would say we accomplished that. The hospital phase, we have an ever-evolving vaccine injury approach, which has a lot of the things that you just talked about, really, you know, helpful compounds. But, you know, Paul also just finished a scientific review of repurposed drugs in cancer, and not just drugs, but different therapies that really have been shown to be effective in controlling cancers. And yes. And by the way, you go to a system oncologist, what are your choices? Chemo or radiation? I mean, they do not use any other therapies. And there's actually a massive science base around a lot of really safe, widely available compounds that treating cancer. And so
I'm glad you mentioned that, because, you know, when they go off patent, obviously, right, they're not a financial interest to the drug companies. And yet a lot of the best molecules are from more than 17 years ago, right? Yep. Such as ivermectin, that's a great example. Yep. And, you know, off-label prescribing has been accepted by the FDA and by the American Medical Association for a very long time until COVID. And then suddenly it was like, oh, you can't do off-label prescribing. Well, wait a second. For the last few decades, doctors have, I mean, forever, they've been using off-label prescribing where appropriate.
It's absolutely shocking, you know. And when I was still working, I mean, the last time I worked in an ICU was November of 21. So I've been out now for a year and a half. But, you know, I would go to work, and when I saw what was happening around the control, especially the ivermectin being pulled from formularies, I mean, I've never in my career, Mike, been told I couldn't use an FDA-approved drug.
Right.
I mean, I've never had any restrictions, and then suddenly, one of the safest drugs in history. I mean, it has literally an unparalleled safety profile. I mean, you know that they distributed across Africa and South America for, you know, the control of parasitic disease, and they've, yes, been doing it for decades to children and women and old people, and, you know, and suddenly it's so dangerous that they don't want you to prescribe it. I've never seen that. And just, it shows you the lengths that they would go to protect that market that opened up. I mean, that's why I think you saw these unprecedented actions. I mean, they had to destroy ivermectin, had to.
That's extraordinary. I want to encourage people to check out your book here. It's called The War on Ivermectin. It's available at Amazon and other booksellers. And it's out, June 6th? Is that what it says?
Yeah, it'll be delivered by then, yeah.
Okay, delivered by June 6th. The medicine that saved millions and could have ended the pandemic, I completely agree. And I want to mention your practice here. The website is Dr. Pierre Corey, and that's K-O-R-Y for Corey, drpierrecorey.com. In what state is your practice, Dr. Corey?
So actually, since we do telehealth, all of us, there's a few of us in Wisconsin. That's where I live now. I'm a New Yorker. I'm from New York, but I live in Madison right now. But my colleagues are in different states, New York, Michigan. But what's interesting, Mike, you'll like this. This is kind of cool, is that we see patients in all 50 states. And one of the ways in which we are doing that is we moved our practice under the jurisdiction of what's called the First Nations Medical Board. It's actually put together by the Crow Indian tribe. And, you know, I applied, I became a registered tribal practitioner. And any patient who sees us, we just ask that they become a member of the tribe, and it's $35 a year. But I gotta tell you, the patients that come to us are so happy to pay it, because by doing that as a practitioner, and let's say you're a tribal member, that relationship and my ability to care for you is completely under jurisdiction of the tribal council. And so no states have jurisdiction over, because they're coming after me from everywhere. I mean, yeah. Wisconsin has like 12 complaints against me, not by a patient, generally by physicians and pharmacists, because I'm such a depraved misinformationist, right? So I've been harassed by the state boards. But here, this is actually a federal statute which created this entity. And so it allows me to see patients in all 50 states. And we also do, you know, we do general medicine. We do a lot of health promotion and counseling. And so it's just a great group that I'm working with. And we're just kind of very happy to be protected and just kind of a little bit in a parallel system, you know, outside the system that turned on us.
See, that's extraordinary. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because the current system is failing, right? The current establishment system, I mean, I think it has failed, but even in the minds of millions of Americans, it's failing and they're looking for alternatives. That's why you said people are happy to pay that $35 a year fee. And I think that, frankly, the way that the medical establishment operated during COVID will be its downfall, because they abandoned, you know, evidence-based medicine. They abandoned medical ethics, first do no harm, the Hippocratic Oath, all of these things. And they broke the doctor-patient trust relationship, which is critical. It's the critical underpinning to medicine. If you don't trust your doctor, it's done, ultimately.
I think you've probably heard this as much as I have, but the amount of people that I meet, like when I go speak and I go to conferences, you know, people come up to me and they are terrified of going to the hospital now.
Yes.
Many of them feel, I don't know if abandoned is the right word, but they don't want to see their primary care practitioner anymore, because they were, you know, they were appropriately skeptical, asked the right questions, you know, reviewed data from numerous sources, and they came to the conclusion, which a lot of us have, that these vaccines were not only the most toxic thing we've ever unleashed, they're the most lethal and they're ineffective. So there are a large portion, I think, of, it's a minority, but there's a significant amount of Americans who found out that the vaccines were a big, big lie. And now when they go to their doctors, and they go to see doctors who have believed that lie, and this is my knock on the system, doctors, Mike, is that, and I think it could have happened to me, it didn't, but I think that the doctors, first of all, didn't ask enough questions, were not skeptical enough. They placed, basically, the problem is they placed way too much faith in the institutions of medicine,
right,
in the agencies, in Fauci and journals, and they were lied to. And so whether they were unknowingly lied to, or they kind of just didn't want to fight back against the lies, I will tell you there's a large portion of U.S. society who they are fleeing. They do not want to go. Like, they're terrified of going to the hospital and having people around them who have been, I guess the word would be, brainwashed with propaganda and censorship.
Well, I completely agree. I think you're accurate in describing that. I want to share with you my personal experience with ivermectin and get your feedback on it. And you'll recognize this. It's a 1 milliliter pipette. And even long before COVID, I had purchased ivermectin, agricultural use, because I have monkeys and goats and chickens and dogs, by the way. And I was using a pipette like this and doing the dosage, you know, based on the kilograms of body weight of the dogs, to dose out ivermectin as a heartworm preventative treatment for my dogs. Yeah. So, you know, I can't say that everybody has pipettes. I mean, but they're not that expensive, you know, $50 on Amazon or whatever, and you dial in the numbers. It's not that difficult. But then when COVID hit and I began to learn about ivermectin, I started dosing myself with the same thing, right? Which I never would have thought to do that before. I had no intention to take ivermectin myself. And yet now today, and even though ivermectin is synthesized now in pharmaceutical companies, I consider it an essential part of my first aid kit. And frankly, and you probably heard this before, and I can't recommend this to anybody else, I'm not your doctor, but I take about, I do about 1.6 milliliters of this, of a 1% solution, before I ever go speak publicly or interact with a crowd. I take it prophylactically. That's just me.
Yes. So, So, you know, although in the book, I really go over how they attacked the massive evidence base for ivermectin in treatment. What's interesting is I do address in the book, what they did to the evidence in prevention, because actually the evidence as a preventative of COVID is incredible. It's like eye popping. I mean, there's literally 18 studies. Think about five of them are randomized controlled trials. Other ones are of similarly high quality, but different designs. And they show these massive reductions in your risk of getting COVID with really tight statistical significance. Like, I've never seen a collection of trials with tight, massive, statistically significant benefits. And so, you know, we have a prevention protocol. I would say a lot of people followed, especially when the variants were more deadly, right? And more severe, like late phase Delta was wicked.
Yeah.
But yes, so my patients, especially those with long haul and vaccine injury, most of them are on ivermectin either as a treatment or as a preventative, because when they get COVID, a lot of times they'll relapse. Their symptoms of their chronic illness gets worse because each spike protein exposure. But I also have patients who are, you know, some are more cautious or risk tolerant than others. And that's one of the approaches that I outline, which is exactly what you do. I say, now you could take it chronically, you know, twice a week, or you could just use it for periods where you're having a lot of travel and exposure, you know, or you could just take it upon first symptoms of a viral syndrome. And so there's a few ways of doing that. And now that the variants are milder, I think the right size approach is what you're doing for sure.
Thank you for joining me today. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, the free speech video platform where you can hear the truth like you just heard here today. Thank you for joining me. Take care.